Coming up on Golf Today, World Golf Hall of Fame member and opinion maker Curtis Strange stops by for a past champ chat on his 89 QBE shootout win with Mark O'Meara, and we'll get his thoughts on the fractured landscape of professional golf. And after a Player of the Year season in 2022 with four wins, what will Scotty do in 2023? We'll play over-under on Scotty's wins next year. And how about a way too early Ryder Cup prediction? Who will play, and most importantly, who will win? We don't play scared on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Tuesday, Damon Hack alongside Ryan Lavender, senior writer with Golf Channel. December, typically kind of a quiet, sleepy month. Not this December, Mr. Lavender.
I keep waiting for a little bit of a slowdown period, a chance to catch our breath. But no, you had Tiger and the Hero. This week, we've got the QBE, format change coming in 2023. Next week, Tiger, Charlie, and the gang at the PNC Championship. And then, before you know, it's Kapalua all
over
again.
Yes, absolutely. Lots to talk about this week. In fact, this week marks the QBE shootout at Tiburon Golf Club in Naples, Florida. 54-hole team event gets underway Friday. And news on Monday surrounding the 2023 event. Next year, the tournament will become a mixed team event. This marks the first time this type of format will return to the schedule since the 1999 JCPenney Classic. Now, players were told of the change last week. In the Bahamas, some notable teams you'll see at the QBE shootout. Steve Stricker, past champ, star on PGA Tour Champions with Cameron Young. And you got two women this year, fantastic, Nelly Korda, Denny McCarthy, then you got Lexi with Mav McNeely, Stanford alum. Your thoughts on this development, this new format that we'll see next year?
Yeah, I still don't know if it's going to satisfy the crowd that wants to see the elite women at an event like a President's Cup, right? There's talk about blowing that up and doing something different. But to me, it does seem like a sensible solution at a time of year that makes a lot of sense for like a one-off type event. Obviously, the success of this format change is going to hinge on top male player participation. This week, we have 9 of the top 50. Moving forward, you'd love to see 9 of the top 25. But I also think, Damon, it's easy to sit in this chair and say, oh, you'd love to see all the superstars on the men's side teed up with the superstars on the women's side. But it's just not that easy. You have the January through August schedule. Then you throw in the Ryder Cup, some other events that you might play in Europe. You have Dubai, maybe some fall events in the PGA Tour, the Hero, the PNC. All of a sudden, your schedule's a little bit crowded. I was thinking about it. There probably is some way for the tour to have some sort of inducements for these players. Maybe it's one of the requirements for players to get PIP money, something along those lines. I'd love to see top participation, Spieth, Scotty, Rahm, Rory, all the like. It's just a little bit harder than I think it is just maybe just sitting here saying that these guys need to play.
I think it's important, though, especially with the momentum that the LPGA Tour has in creating some stars, and this year has seen such an increase in the purses, in the money, for example. And we've seen, you know, great groups in the past. We've seen John Daly with Dame Laura Davies, Tiger Woods with Kelly Keeney in 1996. Tiger, huge star. Kelly Keeney was one of the U.S. Girls Junior, back-to-back U.S. Women's Amateurs, coming from a fantastic family in golf. Brother Tripp had lost to Tiger in the U.S. Amateur, and then there was Hank Keeney, who hits the ball a mile. I mean, Kelly Keeney was the goods, and this was a star-making vehicle, I think, and it could be again.
But why did the event die off? The event died off because the top male players didn't want to do it any longer. That's why there has to be some sort of incentive for these guys to tee up more than just the good of the game, which you would hope that they would do. So anyway, you know, a little nudge in the right direction. Doesn't hurt either.
Let's nudge them right now. How about some potential dream teams? Got us to thinking about putting some players, some teams together. Ryan, I want to start with you. You know, some dream teams you'd like to see in this new format.
I tried to go realistically. I tried to go practically with some of these dream teams. Number one has to be Roy McIlroy and Nelly Korda. These are two alphas, arguably the most explosive players on their respective tours. That's just one you throw those two out there and say, give us your best stuff. Try and beat us. Lydia Ko and Jordan Spieth. Would this be like the golden children, the golden siblings?
Prodigies, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The prodigies. suffered through hard times, back on the other side as well-adjusted adults. And how about Minji Lee and Will Zalatoris? This was a deep pull. These are the two best iron players on their respective tours. Yeah. This would be an absolute laser show. Will Haskett, who's joining the show later, Minji Lee, plus two strokes gained approach, according to Will Haskett. That's like Tiger-esque level.
Wow.
I'd love to see those two go together. 18 greens in regulation.
Yeah.
You can count on that.
All right. We've got some players that similar players, but in different teams. I had a lot of fun doing this. I've got Tom Kim and Lydia Ko together. You know, call them Team Gratitude, Team All Class, Team Good Vibes Only, Team All Smiles. Then I got JT and Nelly Korda. I've got Team Alpha Dog, Team All Business, Team Get Out of My Way. Then I've got Rory and Ann Van Dam, Team Put That Swing on a Poster, Team Long Drive, Team Perfect Positions at the Top.
Yeah, aesthetically pleasing, Team most certainly. With that, I'd love to see like one of my like honorable mentions was John Rahm and Daniel Kang.
Ooh.
Fiery, combustible, could work.
Yes.
Might not work, but it would certainly be entertaining.
Well, that's our social question of the day. We want to hear from you. Next year, the QBE Shootout will become a mixed team event featuring one PGA Tour and one LPGA player. With the news, we want to know who is your dream team, and your answer could be featured on this very show. Now, speaking of the QBE Shootout, let's flash back to the inaugural event in 1989. It was Curtis Strange and Mark O'Meara, a couple of World Golf Hall of Fame members, hoisted the trophy at Sherwood Country Club thanks to rounds of 66, 62, 62. Time now, folks, for a past champ chat as we welcome in the two-time major champ World Golf Hall of Fame member Curtis Strange. Great to spend some time with you. When you think back to 89, your height of power, Mark O'Meara coming into his own as a player, what memories do you have?
How good Mark O'Meara putted. You know, it was that whole time frame, guys, was you know, kind of a rat race, was busy. You didn't, you know, when you're in the middle of that, you never stop and smell the roses, so to speak. You go from one week to the next, but it was, looking back, it was great fun. You don't realize what you were in the midst of doing, of playing good golf consistently. And even when you won something like with Mark, you just kind of went to the next week. You kind of expected it. And that's the last thing you can ever do in golf. But it was just a great run for me personally and for Mark, was starting out. And it was fun. The tournament's fun because there's so many different formats. It was different than what we do on a day-to-day basis.
Curtis, with this becoming a mixed team event, you played in the old JCPenney. Why do you think it's important for the top male players to show up and support this event as folks in your generation did?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it's a wonderful event. I think it's the format is different, and people want different. My gosh, you know, I'd love to see the senior tour have a four-club tournament official. Just something different to show the people how you can really play this game. But to get to back to your question, I love the mixed team back in St. Petersburg back in the day for the main reason I had Nancy Lopez as a partner. That's pretty good to start with. But, you know, we had some top players play. All the top women played. The purse was strong. And don't forget, that's part of it. And when you divide it in half, then the purse becomes 50% of what these guys would want to play for. That's a little bit of an issue. The other issue is that they play a lot during the year, and with this new format, I don't know how that's going to transpire and affect the players at the end of the year. To Ryan's comment, I think the PIP is crazy enough. I don't think we need to add anything else. I don't think we need to give these players anything else. They make enough already. But I think the key is here, and much like you guys have already talked about, back in the old days of JCPenney, they wanted more star power. TV wanted more star power. And it became kind of a so-so tournament after 5, 6, or 7 years, and it just kind of died a slow death. But hopefully this time is different, and because the fans absolutely loved it.
Curtis, it just seems like your generation of top players supported the women. I feel like Nancy was front and center with you guys commercially, as well as inside the ropes. Do you think the modern male player supports the modern LPGA player as well as you guys did?
Damon, I've always been a huge, huge fan of the LPGA. They play so well. And you only get to know that when you go play with them for a week. Let's not forget, back in the 80s, late 70s, when Nancy and I started playing, there was no off-season events. You play, there she is. Wow, she was strong as a bull, and she could hit bullets. And when she drove it well, and I ironed it well, and she was a great putter, we did well. So she was fantastic, and she still is to this day. But we played the tour, and when it ended in October, there was nothing else to play in the rest of October, November, and December. So going to the mixed team sometime early December was a great chance for all of us to get the rust off and to practice for a week, because we started up January 1st. So we all look forward to that. There was no skins game. We're starting shortly after that. But there was just a few overseas events. And after that, sitting at home was not something that all of these type A personalities wanted to do very much.
Curtis, the former host of this event has been in the news quite a bit this year. You were one of Greg Norman's contemporaries, one of his peers. What sort of emotions bubble up inside you when you see the divide that he's helped create this year?
Well, I think, first of all, disruption is part of life. You can't avoid it. I never thought we'd see anything like this in our game. We've had great leadership. We have great people playing the game, great people around the world. But we've always had a couple of disruptors and people that didn't like the system. Well, the system has been pretty damn good for 100 years or however it from the very beginning, the Hogan, Sneeds, Nelsons on up. And I think it's so disrespectful to do and try to hurt the PGA Tour and disrespect those who came before us, who gave us a chance to be on this stage and make a name for ourselves. If it wasn't for the PGA Tour, Greg Norman wouldn't be Greg Norman, okay? Number one, we gave him a stage to use his talents and to showcase his talents. But Greg Norman is a guy really with, I hate to say it like this, is kind of a guy without a tour. He has no deep allegiance and respect for any tour. And he's showing that in true colors here in the last year or so. And, you know, he lives in the States. He played Australia. The only time he ever went back to Australia when he got huge appearance money. So to say he supported his home tour is a crock, too. And Greg and I were friends, and we got along. And, you know, something happened with that relationship. I'll never know. But, I read every week another derogatory comment about quality people, Rory McIlroy or, somebody else that Greg has thrown under the bus. And I hate it for the game. I hate it for our tour. I hate it for Jay Monahan and all the leadership of the tour. And I really hate it for the players who are in the mix now. I certainly hope this doesn't distract from Rory McIlroy's ability and potential to be one of the best of all time, which he already is. But I want him to reach his full potential and not be busied with all of this noise from the outside. So and Greg is causing that, and the Saudi tour is causing that, and I hate it for everyone. But it seems like the way of the world, doesn't it?
It does, Curtis. And I've been fascinated to hear Rory and Tiger say that there is a path forward potentially between these rival factions if Greg Norman steps aside and the lawsuits are stayed. Do you see any potential compromise or work together between the PGA Tour and LIV? Is that even a good thing if Greg Norman steps aside?
I don't know. I'm not involved in it, other than what I read and talk to a few older players, quite a bit, by the way. You guys are probably more attuned to it than I am. I really don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I do know when there's lawsuits involved and negative comments back and forth in the press daily, I just don't see much of a compromise at all. I really don't.
Curtis, what's been your take on the PGA Tour's response to LIV Golf? Have they done enough to stem the tide of all the defections? Should they do more? What's your take on it?
Well, you've already heard me say a little bit about the PIP. I think, you know, the beauty of the PGA Tour has been you're paid on your performance. And that's brings out the true competitiveness, the integrity, the honesty, and the gamesmanship of these players. If they don't work at it and dig it out of the dirt and work at it hard every day, they're not gonna make as much money as they possibly could. Now, I get it that everybody has contracts, but that's part of playing well. If you play well, you're rewarded by outside contracts. So the PIP, I don't like at all, paying people for just being a social media. And I really, as much as I respect and love Tiger, I think it's kind of bogus that he's won the last 2 years. It's only hit so many golf shots. So that's my own opinion. You know, send letters to 1-800-GOLF-CHANNEL, not to me. I used to get enough of them. But so, you know, what the tour has done, I think what the tour has done is fantastic. I think that the 8 or 10 or 12 tournaments that are going to be, everybody's going to play together. And that's what I liked about the World Golf Championships, that it brought everybody together in the fall of the year. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. They ran their course. But what smells bad to me is that this all came right on the heels of this disruptiveness of Phil Mickelson and Greg Norman and Saudi Tour. So when Phil kind of behind the scenes under his breath a month or so ago, or maybe 2 months, said that, well, maybe I was right. Well, maybe he was right. When you look at it, it didn't look right for me. But whatever the case is, now we have a tour that's going to be very strong in the future. We're going to have players playing against the best players in the world a lot, along with the major championships. And that's all a good thing.
Curtis, as a competitor, how important is that with this new-look PGA Tour that you are playing against the best in the world? I mean, you beat everybody. You beat Nicklaus. You know, Trevino was a runner-up. Norman, O'Meara, Faldo, Kite, Woozy, McCumber, Pete, Haas, Price. You beat everybody, Curtis. How important is that?
Personally, it's important. Is it important? No. Does it make you feel like you beat the best? Yes, it does. It's a sense of accomplishment. Does it, when you get the trophy, does it mean anything? Really not. But if you beat whoever it is at the time, if you beat them head to head, it's on the plane ride, it feels good. On the plane ride home, it really feels good. You know, that Bud Light really went down smoothly. And then the third or fourth one went down even better. But anyway, that's what it is. And because you do want to play against the best, it gets your blood really going. I mean, I played in the last round in Canada 1 year with Jack and Greg. Now, come on. Jack was on his way out, but still he was in the last group, still pretty damn competitive. And Greg was Greg. And I happened to come out on top, and it really down deep makes you say, you know, damn it, you know, this was fun today. This is what all of that hard work paid off today.
Curtis, we're at the end of arguably the most acrimonious year in professional golf history. What gives you the most hope that in 2023 we can kind of reestablish the equilibrium in the professional game?
Well, I think the game is bigger than any of this. It has proven to be that. As long as we stay to our true self of who we are, it's about the players, their honesty, their integrity. It's about the guys like Rory McIlroy and young guys like Cam Young or Zalatoris or Scottie Scheffler. Are there better people in this world than those guys? I mean, they're wonderful human beings and they're great competitors, and it falls in their lap now. And I think they'll do well. We have great leadership. We have great sponsors, which we couldn't do any of this without them. We have great TV rights. And that brings the game to the world or to America, which in turn sells the tour. So everybody's in it for a business, but everybody's doing well. Everybody supports the tour. Everybody loves what we're trying to do. Golf is a great avenue. We're very, very lucky. Golf is one of the best avenues for corporate America to be involved with. It sells product. It moves the needle. And as long as that works, then we'll be successful.
Curtis, we could chat with you all afternoon, but it looks like you've got to go fishing. Thanks for a few minutes. We appreciate it, buddy. Hope to see you soon.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks. Enjoyed it very much.
There he is, World Golf Hall of Fame member Curtis Strange. On the other side of the break, we're taking a closer look at the world number two, Scottie Scheffler. He's looking to replicate his strong year in 2023. But can he find lightning in a bottle 2 years in a row? Play a little buy or sell next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today, Scottie Scheffler highlights from the Hero. What a good Sunday. This was the sixth hole. Par five is third, Ryan.
Trying to get back to that world number one spot that he lost about a month and a half ago to Rory McIlroy. That's a pretty good way to get on your way.
Yeah, it tied him for the lead with Hovland at the time. How about the 14th hole? Short game, just won't quit.
All the shots.
He does.
Long games, pure. Obviously, great hands on and around the greens as well.
Just came up a little bit short to Victor Hovland, finished runner-up at the Hero. In fact, for the second straight year, to Hovland would have returned to number one with the win. And our field producer, Andrew Bradley, spoke with Scottie after the round.
A year ago when you finished second here, could you have imagined what would have transpired in the last 365 days?
Yeah, not really. I don't really look too far ahead, and that's I'd always hoped of winning the Masters and winning various golf tournaments, and it was definitely nice to do that this year, but still going to put in the same work this offseason and hopefully replicate a little bit of that next year.
It was a Player of the Year campaign for Scottie Scheffler. 23 starts, 4 wins, 4 runner-ups, 12 top 10s. In more than half his starts, he finished inside the top 10. Only 3 missed cuts worldwide for Scottie in 2022. So it leads us to our buy or sell question of the day. I mean, can he replicate what he did this year, next year?
We've had like 48 hours to perseverate on this question. I don't even think you're quite sold on this. I am going to buy Scottie Scheffler going over, I think, 3 wins.
Okay.
Is a distinct possibility. I really don't think it's that unrealistic. You look at what Scottie Scheffler was able to do in 2022. He already played this elite, elevated schedule. Like, all 4 of his wins would have come in these elevated events.
I see what you're
on the PGA Tour. He's already playing against the best competition. He had 5 other top 3 finishes. Now, they're not all built equally, right? Like, you could backdoor some.
Sure.
You could have close calls like the Tour Championship. If he just picks a couple of those off, we're looking at like one of the best seasons
Tiger,
that a player has
VJ,
had in the past dozen or so years. One thing I think it is going to be interesting for Scottie Scheffler in 2023 is he talks a lot about being present and not really setting long-term goals. 2023 is going to be a test for that because it's going to be natural to compare his stats, compare his results, certain benchmarks throughout the course of the season of where he is and kind of relating it back to 2022. That's something he's going to have to guard against.
Sounds a little familiar to me. Jordan Spieth, 2015, you know, top of the world, 5 wins.
But he backed it up with how many?
One?
In 2016?
2016? I mean, that's the thing. I don't think he's going to be able to replicate because of the energy spent in 2022, because of all the times after the round where you're talking to the media, you're doing this, you're doing that. And Spieth had 2 worldwide wins. You want to throw in Australia at the end of 2016, but it's still 3 less than what he did in 2015. It's possible this could be the high watermark for Scottie Scheffler. We don't know. At this point, it's looking like it's the high water mark for Jordan Spieth when you have a year like that. Rory,
2017 was pretty good for Jordan Spieth, wasn't
it? It was.
Statistically, it was even better.
But the trophies weren't there. The number of trophies. I think with Rory clearly on the, you know, not even on the comeback, he's here. John Rahm finishing the year as strongly as he has with a couple of wins, 1 in Spain in the DP World Tour Championship. Matthew Fitzpatrick, Will Zalatoris, Cameron Young, you know he's going to break through in 2023. I just think that to expect him to replicate 2022 in 2023, impossible. I'll say 2 wins.
Which is like
which
nothing
would be
to scoff
wonderful.
At.
Which
like
would be
the
terrific.
Multi-win season is terrific.
Yes.
Do you think he wins a major championship?
Say it again?
Do you think he wins a major championship?
No, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no in 2023. I think Rory's going to win one. I think Rahm's going to win one. I think there'll be some unexpected one as well. I'm going to say no. I think he'll contend, but I don't think he's going to. I think we're seeing too much strength coming from the likes of Matthew Fitzpatrick this year. It could be Tommy Fleetwood next year or Tyrrell Hatton next year. I think it's very hard. I think your body changes, your expectations change, your time isn't your own. necessarily. I think it'd be very, very hard to think he could even come back and win another major championship next year. Not done winning majors necessarily, yeah. But I think maybe done next year.
I think the well-roundedness of his game, like you wouldn't necessarily put him as a perennial Masters favorite, but you could also see him winning the PGA.
Yeah.
He's such a good driver of the golf ball. You could see him win the U.S. Open. He flights his ball so well. You could see him winning an Open championship. That's why I think he's going to be able to pick one off. Mm-hmm. Maybe not 2023.
Yeah.
I think he's not done winning major championships.
Speaking of the Masters, the high watermark for Scottie Scheffler last season, Augusta National, won his first major, three shots ahead of Rory McIlroy. Was the only player to break par in all four rounds, finishing at 10 under par. Now, how about a little in case you missed it, because Eureka Earth posted this aerial photo of hole 13 at Augusta National Golf Club. The par 5 has been extended. There you see the 12th green there, and then the tee box for 13 way back in the trees. And Kevin Kistner lives in Aiken, got to play Augusta National. He said, "I was totally against it, the changes, until I played it. I don't think it's going to be that bad. If you catch it straight into the wind, I'm not sure you can get around that corner, but if it's a par 5, you can lay up. And the Bombers can probably get home with a 5 or 6 iron. That's the kids. What does Lav think about the changes?
I think so. We're kind of guesstimating here, right? We don't have advanced statistics from Augusta National, nothing official from the Masters Tournament on what they're going to be doing for 2023. I think if you had a perfect club, and their kids mentioned a 5 or 6 iron, to me, a 4 iron is the perfect club that you want to have for that momentous decision that has been lacking in recent years. That club, that amount of loft off a severe side hill lie, like that's where the magic's going to happen. If you can pull off the shot, great, but you could also have disasters and make a bogey on what was the third easiest holder in the 2022 tournament. To me, the 4-iron, if they can somehow get in that position. And look, I think you have to give Augusta National the benefit of the doubt. They have a lot more advanced statistics. They have a lot more data at their disposal to make the right move.
And the changes they make always seem to work, and they're trying to keep up with technology and the changing of the game and the clubs and the ball. And I tell you, I spoke to both Gary Player and Trevor Immelman in the last week about Amen Corner in general, but the 13th hole tee shot in particular. They talked about walking off 12 and how important that tee shot is on 13. Gary Player says you're either angry or joyful or exasperated walking off 12. And so that tee shot on 13, you know left is no good because you got the tributary of Rays Creek. And so you block out to the right and you got the Pine Straw. So I think this tee shot remains of desperate importance in the Masters Tournament.
I think you're seeing some changing dynamics, too, on the second nine last year. 15 played much differently. You had plenty more layups into that area, 100 yards, very tight lie, downhill lie to a very narrow green. So that hole has changed, I think, pretty significantly over the past year. Now 13, if you have some more longer irons in there, if you get that north wind coming in at you and you're hitting hybrids into that green, good luck.
You want to see players like Sir Nick Faldo, you know, 2 iron, 5 wood, layup, go for it. You want to see
I don't want to see 8 irons.
No.
I want to see 9 irons.
You want to see some risk-reward on the par 5 13th. Folks, still to come on Golf Today. It's still too early to be talking about the Ryder Cup, but that didn't stop us or Adrian Meronk, by the way, from mentioning it following his win in Australia over the weekend. Will he be one of the new faces for Team Europe in 2023? We chat next. Back on Golf Today. This weekend, it was Adrian Meronk who cruised to a 5-shot win in the Australian Open, fired a final round 66, which included an eagle at the last. Kind of John Rahm going to make eagle at the last time to time. First European to win the Australian Open since Rory did it back in 2013. And like a lot of folks, you can't help but think about the Ryder Cup. Adrian said this, "I know Rome is a long way to go, but if I keep playing like that, I think I should still make the team, and that would be a dream come true for me." So how about a way too early Ryder Cup chat and take a look at the current European standings. Adrian now with the win moved up 9 spots in the world point list. You'll see 3 players will be taken from the European points list, then 3 from the world point list, and then 6 captain's picks for Luke Donald. So what do you see here? Because people were like crying for Luke Donald, saying like half the team will be playing for LIV.
Yeah, thanks for the disclaimer. This is way too early because you're right. Like 9 months is an eternity, as we proved.
As we've learned.
As we proved this year. But to me, Damon, I think there's like 7 locks for this European Ryder Cup team. As long as these guys have a pulse, as long as they're not mired in some horrific slump, I'm fully expecting this seven to be on Luke Donald's squad. If they are, that is a very solid core and one that can continue to win on home soil. And at that point, if you have that seven locked in, then you have more possibilities. Then Luke Donald can start mixing and matching, looking at pairings, looking at certain friendships. You look at Seamus Power. He's number one on the FedEx Cup standings now heading into the break. Alex Noren played in Paris in 2018. Now you have Adrian Meronk, who's about to crash the top 50 in the world, won the Irish Open, now won the Australian Open. Like, he looks like he's coming at this point. And so you start putting those pieces together, then you're not really crying about some of those live defectors that you had.
Well, the thought was that they'd have no experience. All seven of those players that you posted have played in the Ryder Cup, which is hugely important. When you lose the institutional knowledge, that of Westwood, of Poulter, GMAC, Sergio, Keimer, I mean, you're missing a lot of guys. That's a lot of hours.
Stenson, Rose.
Stenson, I mean, you go on.
I mean, it's certainly a transition, right?
Absolutely. And I tell you what, that's your early, you know, way too early prediction. How about this? I think Europe's going to win again. I'm just going to put it out there. I mean,
December 6th, 2022.
We see it all the time. The Americans dominate and party and shotgunning beers on the tee box, but then they get over to Paris or they get over to Glen Eagles, and we know what happens. Golf course gets tight, throats get a little tight, and next thing you know, the Europeans are dancing, and Tommy Fleetwood's doing this strange stretch, and, you know, Molinari's on somebody's shoulders, and Thomas Bjorn's getting a tattoo. I mean, that's the story of the Ryder Cup in Europe for the last 20-plus years.
Longer than that,
30 years.
And that's why it's so important to have that core, because Luke Donald then can look in the summer. Somebody's going to get hot, whether it's Bobby McIntyre, whether it's Guido Migliozzi. Someone's going to catch fire. He'll continue that form then into the Ryder Cup. Le Golf National was obviously a very constricting golf course for the Americans. Marco Simone, it's a little bit uncertain who it's going to favor, but look, the Americans have all the pressure on them. If you have more rookies on that European side, I don't think necessarily scar tissue or lack of experience is all that bad of a thing.
I think Luke Donald will have some options for Marco Simone, but what about your gift-giving options for the holidays? Yeah, we have an author and broadcaster, Will Haskett, joining the show next with a new book, just in time for shopping in the holiday season. The Science of Golf explains the mechanics of the swing. Now technology has changed the game. Stay tuned for Will after the break. Welcome back to Golf Today. We get closer and closer to the holiday season. We're in the gift-giving mood. So how about a new book, The Science of Golf, written by Will Haskett, examines the science behind the beloved sport of golf, covering topics like the swing, the body, the mind, the equipment, the agronomy of the course, analytics, and much, much more. Will Haskett, the author of The Science of Golf, The Math, Technology, and Data, joins us now. I've got my copy. Fun to read. How'd your love of numbers lead you into writing this book?
You know, thanks first of all for having me. Good to see your faces. Happy holidays to both you guys coming up here. You know, I'm approaching my 10th year covering golf on the PGA Tour over on PGA Tour Radio. And I've always tried to look at any sport that I cover in sort of a statistical or analytical sort of way. It helps me to kind of connect with the sport and tell broader sort of stories. And I was always fascinated by it. And then when all of a sudden the opportunity came up for me to write a book and I was approached about this very, very broad topic, just to say, like, what is the science of golf, is a wild sort of topic to sort of wrap your hands around. But I'd already been so interested in studying all of these various scientific components when it came to following the world's best around the fairways that it was a fun challenge, but also was a fun culmination of a kind of a learning journey that I've had over the last decade of understanding, really in the last 25 years, how rapidly this sport has grown because of our scientific understanding of it.
Will, during your writing and reporting for this book, what was the most fascinating revelation to you?
You know, Lav, I love all the numbers, I love all the data, but one thing that I think separates the top guys in the game of golf right now is their handle of their mind. So the psychological stuff that I learned in this book, some of the studies that are in this book about how to balance right brain versus left brain, like literally curing the yips out of individuals, is kind of in this book in terms of how we're leveraging the psychological advancements of sports science. And so there's anecdotal reflections on Colin Morikawa and the work that he does with his coach Rick Sessinghouse, and Phil Mickelson's incredible win at nearly age 51 at the PGA Championship. If you go back and listen to what Phil did that week, it was so much about the process, and what, when we hear the word process, how that actually physically manifests itself in the brain and allows these guys to be at their absolute competitive best was without a doubt the most fascinating component of it, because these days the line is so fine, especially on the PGA Tour, between good and great, and then the actual greats themselves. And it really, in my opinion right now, it comes down a lot to how those guys can compartmentalize and turn the noise off in their head. So the psychological stuff that I learned about, I had no idea how advanced some of that stuff was.
Speaking of great, Tiger Woods, his golf swing is still probably the most viewed on Twitter and Instagram, even in the modern era. What's been his influence on the science of golf?
Yeah, I mean, where to start? How many segments do you have, right, for Tiger? And the fact that Tiger arrived on the scene at right about the exact time that the sport was really ramping up in terms of technology and the equipment, right? So we had the first titanium drivers. We had the real boom of graphite shafts. And then the ball changes within a couple of years of Tiger Woods becoming a professional. So the advent of the Pro V1 and that technology and what they're able to do in golf ball technology all sort of aligns there. And so it's not just that Tiger Woods changed how we view fitness. That's a huge component of it. It's not how it changes our view of speed, but it's also all of those things coming together at the same time the manufacturing companies were creating new pieces of tech that really changed the way the golf ball flies and the golf club is swung. So it was sort of a perfect storm. And then on top of it, especially at the highest level, with purse increases and all of the money that flowed into the sport post-Tiger, you now see the best players in the world able to invest in all of these components. There's a great quote in the book from Ben Crane, and I asked him what one of the biggest differences is from being a pro now to when he was coming up, and he said it's the investment in teams. These guys have the opportunity to invest money in a team to where there are 10 chapters in my book, and some of the best players in the world have someone on the payroll that almost covers all 10 different elements scientifically in their game. Tiger Woods changed all of that, because the best players in the world have to look at all of these things to find that, you know, 10th of a shot, or that 1% edge, or however they quantify trying to get from good to great and great to elite.
Well, these guys have teams. There's all this data, new science, all this new information. What's the next frontier? What are we looking at in 2030, 2035?
Ooh. That's a really good question. I think we're just at the very beginning, Lav, honestly, of seeing young players that are coming up who have been taught from the day that they were 2 or 3 years old in sort of this new model that science has done. So the advent of TrackMan and launch monitors and everything really over the last 15 years or so has a new generation of golf instructors that are teaching, and I'd lead off the book with this, it has to do with, it used to be the ends justified the means. So you look at where the ball went and that justified the swing that you were doing. Well, now we can actually look at it in terms of the means, what the actual data is on the golf ball taking off to justify whatever the swing looks like. I feel as if we're just at the cusp of even new sort of artistry of how guys get it done. I just spent, you know, a few days with Patrick Welch, who's a great player at Oklahoma. He actually swings cross-handed, and he's been doing it since he was 2, 3 years old. If he had done that 30, 40 years ago, I was chatting with him about it, I don't think there's a coach that allows him to get to the level that he is, being an All-American at Oklahoma. But because we have all of this technology to validate what his swing does, I think we actually are just at the beginning of seeing a younger generation of golfers who are going to go about it in many different ways as long as they're hitting all of their optimal targets that we're measuring. So I feel like, to answer your question, in 20 years or 10 years from right now, we may actually see golf look a little bit different than the very traditional perfect golf swing that a lot of guys have been achieving for over the last quarter century.
Oh, I'll still be making double bogeys 10 years from now.
I was going to say, your swing is certainly...
No doubt. Yep. No doubt. Hey, writing a book is a huge undertaking, especially with kids. Congratulations, Will, on the science of golf. Happy holidays. We'll speak to you down the road.
Thanks, guys. No book in my future. I'm just broadcasting golf next year. That was enough.
I don't
blame
you.
One and done.
Take a couple years off.